Good morning. Vermont Viewpoint here on WDEV FM and AM, streaming at WDEVradio.com. I'm Lee Cattell, and joining me this morning hosting Vermont Viewpoint is Ross Connolly. He's on the line somewhere in New Hampshire, I believe. Morning, Ross.
Morning, Lee. I'm actually down in the great state of New Jersey, but
my condolences.
Better up there. Yeah, I'll take them.
What are you doing down in New Jersey?
One of my work trips. I actually was listening in to the previous segment. I could use some cheaper travel, so I'm looking forward to reduced prices, hopefully, of traveling around the country.
Well, we know the guy to hook you up to take care of all that for sure, so we got that covered. In the next hour, we're going to welcome in Andrew Korst. He is a federal affairs liaison with the Americans for Prosperity. And what are we going to talk about in the second hour?
Well, it's going to be one of those big topics. I'm sure everyone's seen it on the news. There was a bill that moved through Congress having to deal with TikTok, maybe something for our Gen Z listeners that they're very concerned about. So Andrew's going to give us an update of what happened in Washington and what's going to happen with TikTok.
All right. That's coming up in the second hour here on WDEV. Our phone lines are open. You are invited at 802-244-1777. The toll-free number from everywhere is 877-291-8255. And our first hour guest is Gina Galfetti. She is a state representative for Berrytown and Williamstown. And she's joining us live on the air right now. Good morning, Representative Galfetti.
Good morning, Lee. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just trying to figure out what to do in the state house.
Well, let me first ask you this. Are you a TikToker?
You know, I'm actually not a TikToker. Ever since they came up with the idea of boiling chicken in NyQuil for COVID, to combat COVID, I figured that it probably didn't have anything useful on there for me, Lee.
You started to doubt the veracity of what you were receiving through their channel.
Absolutely.
All right, so no TikTok for Representative Galfetti. In the meantime, lots going on at the State House and the back and forth about the education secretary. She gets defeated, and people are talking about the rancor and how she was treated over these last few days. Any thoughts on what has gone forth over the last few days between the Senate and the governor?
Yeah, you know, I think this is another example of the supermajority and left-leaning progressives and Democrats trying to combat the administration. You know, we need bold change in the education funding system, and I think that Scott's candidate would be fantastic at doing that, but he's really hitting a roadblock with the Senate right now, and it's not good.
There's a big dispute about what her qualifications are and whether she has the skills necessary or the experience necessary to take on this job properly. What are the most important skills that an education secretary would need to have?
Well, I think the most important skill is to get back to the content that we're teaching in our schools. I think that we need to standardize the types of content that are being taught in schools, and most importantly, focusing on getting our test scores up. You know, we've got some of the highest per pupil spending and some of the lowest test scores in the school, and I think that she could bring a new perspective to that, and she's certainly capable of handling the state of Vermont, given that the school district that she was managing in Florida was nearly the size of the entire state of Vermont. So, bringing that fresh tool set and a fresh set of eyes into the program is really important.
On the Democratic side, the opposition to Saunders, a lot of it stemmed from her work with charter schools and whether or not they would continue to maintain a proper public school focus here in the state of Vermont. And do you need that sort of experience in order to handle this job? Because a lot of what Vermont does in education is in public schools. So is her focus and her skills not suitable for what is going on here in Vermont?
Absolutely not. I think that her skill set is makes her very capable of handling what's going on in Vermont. There's certainly an issue with charter schools and how we're going to treat those going forward with funding. And having that experience is going to be a big part of strengthening our public school system as well.
Well, over the last yesterday, there were a series of votes. More than 10 districts in the state had a chance to vote on their school budgets for a second time. And here in the Harwood Unified Union School District, which covers Waterbury, Duxbury, Waitsfield, Warren, and Fayston, they voted no for a second time. So it's back to the drawing board again. And a couple other districts also rejected their school budgets. And we may be looking toward exercising that third option where if districts don't have the budget by a certain date, they can borrow up to 87% of last year's budget until they find a budget. But I also hear the House might be working on a workaround on that rule. What is going on in the House about school budgets right now?
Well, I mean, what we just did with the yield bill, H-887, was to try to give us some relief for the increase in tax rates. But it was really kind of more of a shell game. We added a cloud tax to pre-written software. We raised a new short-term rental impact surcharge of 1.5%, which will raise about $6 million. And, you know, those were the types of things that we looked at with the yield bill, but it really doesn't give any framework for long-term release. We authorized yet another study. We're really good at authorizing studies in the building. But by the time they report back in December of fiscal year 2025, it means that there's been no structural reform to the education funding system. And with that report coming back in FY25, there wouldn't be any real changes until fiscal year 2028. So we haven't really moved the ball in terms of what's going to happen next year with education funding. What's going to happen with the CLA? It's just, it's still kind of a mess, and we're not taking affirmative action this year to change anything for next year.
What do you find is the result of these studies? To me, putting this study together right now seems like an effort to kind of table the issue while they look at it and then come back with recommendations a few years later when this could even be more out of control than it is right now. Sometimes studies come in to kind of forward an idea that the legislature would like to promote, and sometimes it seems it's like stalling out on things that the legislature wants to maintain. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, you're right on there, Lee. This study is just kind of a distraction from actually having real change in the funding of education, because I don't think that anybody really knows what the solution is right now. Act 60 made things very complicated for school funding, and you know, it was an effort to get some more equity across the board, but the mechanism for doing it in Act 60 really is just not working. And because of that, we're going to have a lot of problems going forward. And it just it's like you said, you know, it's kind of a distraction from what's happening and the fact that nobody really knows how education funding should be executed.
As far as folks who are rejecting school budgets, some folks are taking a look at the tax increase and saying, I can't go that far. But how many of the people are you hearing from are saying what they're teaching our kids is miseducating our kids, it's not serving them well, and it doesn't matter what the cost is at this point. I'm done supporting the public education system. Is there any of that sentiment in your district?
Oh, absolutely. You know, our school budget was voted down the first time. And I think people are seeing, you know, this huge increase in property taxes and voting down the budgets in their district. But ultimately, even with voting those budgets down, we're still looking at a huge increase in taxes because, you know, school funding's across the state, not just concentrated in one district. And, you know, people are seeing the handwriting on the wall and voting down their budgets when it may not have the impact that they're hoping for on property taxes.
Are folks in the House talking among themselves about what this might look like 2 or 3 years down the road? I mean, we're looking at, you know, 10 to 15 to 20% property tax hike this year. Is that like a one-time only whack and we'll go down to more reasonable things that more line up with our regular inflation rate? Or is this going to be an extended period where every year we're going to be looking at increases that are above what inflation is?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is things are trending upward, right? And I don't think anybody can predict what's going to happen in the next few years because, as you mentioned, this study has just passed the buck and there's no real structural reform to the education fund. Because of that, you know, we're going to be looking at future tax increases to try to, you know, get the education fund under control. And as you mentioned, you know, nuts and bolts education is suffering in the state. We're not teaching the basics. We have a low rate of literacy as far as, you know, people not reading at their grade level and things like that. Math, sciences, we're just not getting the job done. And it's concerning.
We're talking with Gene. Go ahead, Ross.
Sorry. I just want to jump in because I think the last thing that Vermonters want to hear is anything about tax increases. Is there any movement, Representative, to lower the cost of living for Vermonters, since that seems to be a top concern for everyone across the state?
Well, to be quite frank with you, Ross, I don't think that we are moving in a direction to lower the cost of living in Vermont. The legislature hasn't done anything this session except look at raising more money through tax increases and fee increases. And, while they may have stabilized the homestead property tax to some degree, we're still going to be looking at businesses and out-of-state homeowners seeing an 18% increase. And that translates into everyday costs. If the businesses that are receiving higher taxes, their products and goods and services are going to become more expensive. And likewise with landlords that have got apartment buildings, they're not going to see the relief. So that's going to translate into higher rent costs. So things are going up, not down.
Representative Galfetti, what committees do you serve in the House right now?
I'm on Corrections and Institutions, Lee, which deals with taking care of all the state buildings and sites. And then Corrections works with, you know, DOC to set policy for what's happening in the jail system.
All right. Well, let's start with institutions, all those state buildings. I know there was one building in downtown Burlington that used to house the Department for Children and Families, and they're not there anymore. So a lot of changes in ownership of these buildings. What's developing in the legislative session right now?
Well, I mean, we're looking at consolidating property, right? We need to examine the cost of a lot of the buildings and structures that we've got and what it's costing us to maintain them. And with a lot of folks switching to telework and online services, we don't need the same amounts of office space that we've traditionally had. And, you know, the overhead for operating a lot of these business or buildings is pretty significant. We've got stuff in Montpelier that we have to deal with from the floods. And, you know, we've got other buildings like I believe it was the Zampieri building that we're looking at selling up in Burlington and just trying to put some of that money back into the capital budget.
Are there any buildings, are they considering taking these buildings upon sale and turning them into housing units somehow as a part of to transfer these places to help alleviate the housing shortage in Vermont?
Yeah, I think that's a priority for us when we're looking at selling a building, right? I mean, for example, you've got the old Williston Police Barracks that's sitting in a really prime piece of real estate. And we want to make sure that the town of Williston has the opportunity to purchase that first so that we could potentially see a plan from them for affordable housing on the site.
And as far as the flooding from last summer, of course, a lot of buildings in downtown Montpelier were heavily damaged. Is the cleanup still continuing in some of those state buildings? How about an update on what the process is with cleaning up those buildings and whether we're hearing word about when they might be used again?
Well, you know, there's a significant cost that goes along with cleaning out a building that's been flooded. You know, you've got to dry the building out. You've got to deal with mold remediation issues and preventing the mold from coming on. I know ServPro was instrumental in, you know, taking the lead on that right after the flood to try to protect some of these buildings from future degradation. And we're just kind of chipping away at things. You know, you've got FEMA money that's coming in and, you know, what the ultimate cost is going to be and the price tag are kind of in flux right now.
And as far as rebuilds or remodeling, these are, I would think these would be historic places or historic locations. They're in downtown Montpelier. Are they looking for restoration or is it possible that there would be a demolition and rebuild for some of these buildings?
There's not going to be any demolition or rebuild. I think the focus is creating opportunities to have more resiliency to flooding. You know, some of those buildings were actually waterproofed in the basement and fared quite well during the flood. And I think it's just a process of converting all the buildings into more resilient structures so that they can, you know, fare some of these floods that potentially come in the future.
Well, I was there for the floods last summer, Representative. What's the timeline look like on some of these buildings in downtown Montpelier being reopened? Is it mostly bounced back or is there still time to go?
Oh, there's going to be time before a lot of these buildings in the lower levels have been cleaned out and are back online, but we're chipping away at getting everything operable again. You know, a big problem with it is some of the elevators in the buildings were taken out, and to get those elevators back online is a pretty significant process. So that's going to be a big part of getting these buildings up and going again.
Let's move over to the corrections side there for a moment, Gina, because last I heard the corrections department was having a difficult time finding enough staffing for all their locations. Of course, that's kind of a statewide and nationwide thing right now, finding enough help. But has there been any progress made in the corrections department in that regard?
You know, the corrections department is definitely still suffering there. We don't have the staff, as you mentioned, to administer all of these buildings. And there's a lot of, you know, there's a side letter that was introduced that increases the salary for new folks coming on. And we've had some good classes come out of the training part of it. But, you know, there's issues with salaries. There's issues with safety. There's issues with just getting folks to want to come into these facilities and cover these jobs. And a lot of the folks that are there now are doing a lot of mandatory overtime to keep these facilities running. And it's concerning to think that, you know, we can't take care of everybody in the system well. We also have the issue of, you know, working on finding the best healthcare company to administer the healthcare programs and facilities, and that's a big issue right now. You know, went out to bid, only one company came back with a bid, so we're hamstrung and kind of backed into a corner on how to move forward with that.
And what's the biggest issue in corrections with healthcare? Is it maintaining general maintenance for inmates, or are we dealing with, you know, drug withdrawal issues and aspects of that for healthcare?
I think the big thing with healthcare is just getting a standardized system across all of the facilities. You know, the healthcare companies are dealing with staffing issues too, right? So that's going to create some gaps in where the, you know, healthcare should be strengthened and not and moved forward. It's really a question of getting standardized care, getting folks into it. You know, there's a environment in the correction system of, you know, folks that are using the system to get attention and move through that. So walking that fine line between, you know, patients within the system is difficult to sort through who's really in need of services and who's not. And the other problem that you have is there's just, how could you say it? There's a disconnect there between the staff and the healthcare staff and who's making sure that people are getting connected with the proper services.
Gina, we were talking a moment ago about treatment for prisoners for drug abuse issues in corrections. Is the idea of using things like methadone and buprenorphine, is that standard procedure? Are those the only methods that the corrections department is using right now to try and get people off of drugs?
Yeah, the Suboxone program and the methadone program are something that has really taken hold in the Vermont prison system. It's readily available to folks that are coming in, as well as those that are getting prepared for reentry. It's I think we're talking about at least 50% of the population that's in there is on some sort of opioid replacement therapy. You know, the problem for me with that is we're not really pushing the cessation anymore. It's more of a maintenance thing, and that's kind of the outlook of the whole healthcare industry, is not to push for full sobriety, but to use the opioid replacement therapy. And, you know, the counseling and avenues for people that want to just stop using drugs could be improved.
Are you hearing any reports of people who aren't addicted to drugs who are in prison because of the proliferation of these pills that are available are developing habits while they're incarcerated?
I wouldn't say they're necessarily developing problems when they're in the prison system. I think it's more of a social problem that's taking hold in the entire state, and it's reflected in the prison population.
And as far as dealing with the costs and the lack of personnel, is it possible that the state may consider moving more Vermont inmates out of state?
Actually, I think the goal and, you know, the intent is to not move any more inmates out of state and be able to bring people home. But it's a problem of capacity, right? We need to think about perhaps specializing what each prison deals with as far as the population. I think that would be very effective. We're looking at facilities that need to be updated and improved, and it's a real balance there. I think that we want to get these folks back into the state so that they can make the connections with family and friends that they need to be successful in reentry.
We're talking with Gina Galfetti, the representative from Berrytown and Williamstown, 802-244-1777, toll-free from everywhere, 877-291-8255. John from Moortown, you're on with Representative Galfetti. Good morning.
Good morning. I have a question kind of going back to taxes we were discussing earlier, and I'll preface it by saying it used to be that politicians would seem to at least give lip service to the fact that they don't want to raise taxes, and the current progressive Democrat regime seems to be almost gleeful with their empowerment. And the fact that they can and will raise taxes, and the word arrogance comes to mind. And so the question becomes, what is the mood like in the state house, and how are you able to even have a conversation with these with that mentality and these progressive Democrats that seem to have that mentality? Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for the question. It's really difficult in the state house right now to make a difference in what we're going to do going forward. And you kind of hit the nail on the head. It seems as if we are engaging in gleeful spending to support programs that can't be funded in an ongoing fashion. You've got the progressive, as you mentioned, the progressive agenda that's really taken hold within the Democratic Party itself. And the Republican voices are largely ignored. With the supermajority, they don't need our votes to get legislation moving forward, so they don't listen to us. We're discounted. Sometimes I feel like we're as effective as a throw pillow on a couch when it comes to making a difference in policy. You know, we've got legislation that's moving ahead at warp speed, and you notice a lot of floor amendments being proposed, and some Republicans have actually been effective in getting bills amended on the floor, but the reality is those bills shouldn't have even been coming to the floor until they were thoroughly thought through for all unintended consequences. And that's something that the other side is just not looking at, is what are the unintended consequences of some of these agendas and what that's going to do to affordability. We've got big problems with the goals that were set forth in the Global Warming Solutions Act, the Unaffordable Heat Act, and now the Renewable Energy Standard. Those are all going to drive up costs for Vermonters. When you're looking at a potential 70-cent increase in your home heating fuels, that's just ludicrous. And to push this climate agenda that, as both sides have noted, is going to have no impact on climate change, and forcing people to make conversions to electricity is going to create volatility in the electrical services market. We're going to have problems actually getting to our deadlines, and the Global Warming Solution Act opens us up to lawsuits based on not hitting these deadlines. And that's just not going to help Vermont keep its costs down. And the workforce isn't there to administer all of these initiatives and put in the heat pumps and weatherize the homes. And it's just, it's a mess.
Is it the plan for, I mean, you never look at the plan, but sometimes these laws go into effect and a certain thing is expected to happen. And the structure of these bills is creating for the Democrats the opportunity to say, well, we don't necessarily want to raise taxes, but here's this law that we have to follow. So what can we do?
Yeah, I mean, the legislators put all these arbitrary parameters into things without thinking of the long-term execution of how they're actually going to get from point A to point B. And it's something that Vermonters are going to end up paying for. And as you mentioned, we're going to see increases in taxes and fees to be able to float some of these ideas and programs. And, you know, what should be happening is instead of these policies being punitive, they should be incentivized so that the market is actually reflective of what needs to happen. An example is the electric car initiative. We've got consumers that don't want to purchase electric vehicles, but it's being forced on them to meet these arbitrary deadlines, and it's not going to be effective. And we don't have the grid capacity to handle all of this stuff. You know, I live in a neighborhood that was built in the late 60s, and most of the service heads around here are 100-amp services. They're not going to be able to support the heat pumps and the charging stations for vehicles. And it's just one of those situations where we're kind of cutting off our nose to spite our face.
The Global Warming Solution Act has a body, an appointed body, that is making some very important decisions about these things that aren't necessarily going through the legislature. Does having this board insulate elected representatives from having to answer for some of the decisions that come down the line?
You know, it's an attempt to do that, but I think that voters can go to the ballot and choose other candidates. And at the end of the day, when it's the supermajority that was passing all of these laws, they have to take responsibility for that, right? And people are going to be changing their votes and their minds going forward and realize that it's the legislature that created the board. It's not the board that that initiated all these problems. They're trying to administer a program that was ultimately created by the legislature.
Is there any effort to find common ground between the two sides to try and address some of these concerns from Vermonters? Because a lot of folks can't afford this, and you know, something's got to give. So, is there any response in the state house to try and find the middle ground on these energy issues?
No, and the reason being for that is that they don't see the need to find any common ground. They're pushing an agenda that they're 100% committed to, and they're ignoring the need to find any compromise or adjust things to make them more realistic. It's their way or the highway.
Gina, you mentioned you're in the Corrections and Institutions Committees. Does the Department of Corrections, are they responsible for the state's sentencing guidelines for inmates?
Not really. That all comes from the judicial branch as far as what the sentencing is going to look like. DOC has some say in what types of people will be monitored in different ways, but it really comes down to the judiciary for the sentencing.
A lot of people are concerned about crimes being committed by people who are out on parole and probation and kind of the catch-and-release pattern that's been created here in Vermont. And is that a topic of conversation in the State House?
Yeah, public safety is definitely on the minds of folks in the State House, and we're looking at a bill that would increase decrease the threshold for property theft, and that's a big problem, especially for places like Burlington. You know, you see a lot of the companies that are moving out of downtown, like L.L. Bean and the Outdoor Gear Exchange, are moving off Church Street. L.L. Bean's already built its facility in Williston, I believe. And if we can't, you know, put some teeth into what we're doing with folks that have multiple violations and start getting some sentencing guidelines that keep these folks contained, we're going to have real problems going forward.
Other things going on in the State House. Now, there's a Agency of Agriculture, which handles farm animals. There's the Fish and Wildlife, which handles wild animals. And I hear that there's a move afoot to perhaps create an agency for animal welfare. And I'm wondering what sort of animals would be covered under that wouldn't be covered under the other two departments. And my first thought is house pets. What are you hearing about what's going on with the animal welfare department?
Well, you know, that bill, H-626, really is aimed at standardizing, you know, rescue procedures and licensing for people who are allowed to do rescues, and keeping an eye on pets. It's really, you know, focused more on pets than it is on livestock per se. But they want to bring up the level of quality that all of these facilities offer for rescued animals, and standardizing the system to make it safer for animals that are in difficult situations. And you know, it's got its attributes, but it also is going to result in an increase in cost of registration, because they're going to have to expand the number of positions they have to check in on certain facilities and things like that. So there's a cost issue that's associated with it.
Okay.
Is it really necessary to set up another department, or do you think that could be done with the existing departments for animal welfare?
You know, it's complicated, Ross. There's definitely some bad actors out there that need to be reined in, and whether or not it warrants having a whole new department is questionable, or whether we could do this through existing resources. But it's something that I think a lot of people are concerned about.
244-1777-877-291-8255 is the number if you'd like to join us as we chat with Gina Galfetti, representing Berrytown and Williamstown. As we're moving toward what it's either this weekend or next weekend that the House is looking to adjourn, right?
Yeah, I don't think that we'll be adjourning on the 10th. I think it'll be something that's closer to the 18th. We've got a lot of bills that are still in committees and could potentially go to conference committees. So I think the May 10th adjournment date will definitely get pushed back, because we need all these bills to come back to the floor. They need to be debated and moved forward, and it's going to be a long session. We got a lot of work left to do.
We've talked about a few of these issues. What haven't we discussed that remains on the plate for the House that's yet to be hashed out?
You know, we've got the judiciary stuff that's coming back for the sentencing guidelines for folks. And we've also got, you know, you've got 258, the wildlife bill, which would eliminate the wildlife board from Fish and Wildlife and make it into an advisory board. And we should be just following best management practices. We had a bill last session to regulate hunting and trapping with best management practices that the department itself has developed a lot of these guidelines and is working in lockstep with the board as it's currently structured. And the push of 258 is to change that, and we haven't even given it a chance to work. And the state of Vermont's always been very effective at managing populations of animals in the state, so there's really no need for this.
What have you heard from the hunters? Is this a big concern from folks that go hunting a lot? Is it going to make it more difficult for them to go out and hunt in Vermont woods?
Well, you know, the hunters are upset with this. They're not, you know, because we're not going to be following necessarily the recommendations for best management practices in the state, folks that are trapping are going to have a difficult time, and people that are hounding and hunting with hounds are going to have a difficult time, and it really threatens the traditional use of land and what's historically been the best way to control populations and would be replacing it with a board that's just not as qualified as the current one.
802-244-1777. Let's go to the phones. Line one, good morning. Name and town, please.
Good morning. My question or comment for the representative.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Before you get into that, would you please introduce yourself and tell me what town you're calling from?
I'm calling from Southern Vermont. I'm calling because I don't want any relative identified who's incarcerated right now.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, I'm calling about the conditions in the women's facility, in that dietary offerings are extraordinarily poor. They are allowed a small glass of milk if they go for breakfast at 5 o'clock in the morning, and that's it for milk. The cheese and ice cream offerings are next to nothing. And as a woman, Madam Representative, you know how important calcium is for women. I'm also very concerned about the medical management. The medicines have been mismanaged in some cases. And in some cases, a person that I know has had to go to the emergency room a couple times because of the negligence that happened at the facility. So I just want you to be aware of things that are going on in that facility and try to make things better for the women who will be coming out. So that's my comment.
Thank you, caller. Go ahead, Gina.
Well, I you know, all of those things are very concerning, and I think that's why we're looking at overhauling the healthcare system within the facilities. You know, the other thing that's going on is the Chittenden Regional Facility is aging, and it's not particularly conducive to a lot of the new programming that they should be having in the women's facility. And we're looking at replacing that facility and incorporating it with a reentry facility. So these women coming out will have better options moving forward.
And that's probably something that's a few years off in the works, or is that something that is a little bit more imminent in its development?
That's something that's going to be a few years off. We're going to have to analyze the cost that go along with it, and we're really working on, you know, putting out the folks at Buildings and General Services to look for different properties that it could be sited on, and we're really kind of still in the study phase of what the best move forward is going to be.
Representative Gina Galfetti, representing Berrytown and Williamstown. Very much appreciate your time on Vermont Viewpoint this morning. Thanks for your time and information today.
Thank you, Lee. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm going to be down there trying to fight for any kind of affordability and tax relief that I can.
Gina Galfetti here on WDEV. We're heading to the newsroom at the top of the hour. Ross Connolly and Lee Cattell here on Vermont Viewpoint. Andrew Korst is going to talk about the TikTok bill signed into law last week when we return.